Oh, hi. Welcome to our weekly devotion. This is Dr. Owen Anderson, and this week I want to look at Luke 24. Now, I've looked at Luke 24 in the past, and you can scroll back and see I've covered specifically this section about the road to Emmaus. I think this is just a brilliant section, and of course, all of Scripture is brilliant. But what this particular section does is it tells us how to think about the resurrection. So a quick summary of what that means. These two disciples are walking and talking, and Jesus joins them, and they are confused about what's happened in Jerusalem. So Jesus asks them, and they say that Jesus of Nazareth had been handed over, sentenced to death, and crucified, but they'd hoped he would redeem Israel. And then on top of that, some of the women had gone to the tomb and did not find his body. And so Jesus corrects them and says, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what he'd said, what was said in Scripture concerning himself. So I opened that up in this previous post and explain what that means. But here what stood out to me was as we keep going, after Jesus leaves those two disciples, they had that meal, and they return to Jerusalem. They find the 11 assembled together, and they're telling them the story. Jesus appears in their midst, and they all thought they're seeing a ghost. And this is what I want to open up here. It's very interesting, because he says to them, "Why are you troubled? And why do doubts rise in your minds? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have." Or in the ESV, it says the word spirit. "A spirit does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have." And now, this has always been an important passage to argue against Gnosticism, which is the belief that God is so good that he wouldn't become incarnate, because flesh is and matter is a source of evil. And so this is an important verse for that, to say, no, Jesus really did become incarnate. And in fact, John defines the Antichrist as one who denies that Jesus came in the flesh. So there's some important things going on here. But for me, what stood out is just that there's this distinction Jesus makes between, on the one hand, spirit, and on the one hand, having flesh and bones, or being material. And I think there's some important things going on, because it reminds us that there are both of those things. He doesn't deny there are both of those things, or say that really they're just the same thing. But he affirms that there are both of those things, and the reality of both persists and is important. And his resurrection, his existence as a human, is he's not just a spirit. Humans are a body-soul unity, a body-spirit unity. Now, I think the word ghost has a little bit different idea, which is a person who died, a human who died, and their spirit returns in a visible way somehow. And that even is being challenged here, because he's saying, no, the fact that you can see me, you can also touch me. You can see my wounds. You can see that I'm made of flesh and bones. Then he eats with them as well and shows that he is resurrected. And so the restoration, the resurrection, has to be to a full human. Not simply Jesus comes and dies, but he is the first of the resurrected, and as humans are body-soul unities, he is raised in the same way. He has a body as well as a spirit, and both are real. Now, we know there are Gnostics who deny the one side of that, and they say, well, he's so good, he can only be a spirit. But there are others, for example, Mormons, who deny the other side of that. And Joseph Smith gave a sermon, the King Follett Discourse, where he says that God, the Father, is made of flesh and bones just like us. And on that basis, he teaches this idea that we can become gods ourselves. There's no essential difference between us. So another thing that we have in this little passage is we have the seed of the doctrine of Christ as God incarnate. Now, if you say God incarnate, it means that God isn't always incarnate. We know from the Shorter Catechism that God is a spirit, infinite, eternal, unchanging, etc. Beginning there with spirit, though, God is not corporeal. God is not made of matter, because God is the one who created matter. And so, excuse me, the idea that God has always been flesh and bones would mean that the incarnation is not anything special or to be commented on. Jesus wouldn't need to prove that he has flesh and bones because that would just be what God always is. You wouldn't need to say something different about God to be like saying, I'm God, just a tautology. So the fact that he makes a point to say, no, I really do have flesh and bones, is connected up with the fact that he's raised as a human who's a body-soul unity, and that the incarnation is a distinct thing. God isn't made of flesh and bones. God is a spirit, God is the creator. And so when the eternal Son of God becomes incarnate to represent humans, this is not something you can say, well, yeah, God always had flesh and bones. God is always made like that. The incarnation is something that is unique. And Jesus here proves that and anticipates objections, not just from Gnosticism, but also from those who might say God was always physical. I think there's some element of that, of course, in any polytheistic religion. And here we have Jesus, the eternal Son of God, the Logos, who, when the time was right, became incarnate, born in Bethlehem. All the story about his life, trial, death, crucifixion, and resurrection. So whenever I go through this chapter in Luke 24, I'm always amazed. I mean, this is, of course, true in each chapter of Scripture, but this one has so much to unpack and bring out that every time I come to it, I'm thankful, and I hope I've helped you do that a little bit today as well.